Welcome back to Season 2 of the Clean Water Pod, the show about the challenges and successes in restoring and protecting water quality. My name's Jeff Berkus, and I'm talking to dedicated professionals across the country to build an understanding of how policy and science work together to meet the goals of the Clean Water Act for fishable, swimmable, and drinkable water quality in our nation's waters. This month, we're headed back to Maryland in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Working in water quality, it's important to understand scale. The Chesapeake Bay has an enormous watershed. It spans multiple states. It's a huge, fun project to talk about. However, many times people are going to be more motivated to act to improve water quality in their own backyard. So we wanted to visit one of the smaller watersheds within the Chesapeake to talk about what we think is a pretty successful and interesting initiative. So today you're going to hear from Joanna Ogburn, who's the lead for the project on the Choptank River in Maryland. And you're also going to hear from Leslie Grunden, who is a planner in one of the counties in the watershed. Their story, I think, really illustrates a great model that could be replicated by other groups around the country that are interested in making some changes to their communities. And it just really lays a really good foundation. So I want you to think about that if you're in that position, if you're interested in starting a water quality project, or maybe you're in one, but you want to jumpstart it and maybe to see some more success. I think there's some really valuable lessons to learn from that here. One quick note before we start, both Joanna and Leslie mentioned NOAA as a partner, and I just wanted to mention that that's not a person, but that's an acronym for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So without further delay, let's get into those interviews.
Hello, I'm Joanna Ogburn with JBO Conservation.
Well, Joanna, thank you so much for joining us on the Clean Water Pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start off with Joanna first, before we get into this cool project that you're involved with. So how did you get into water quality, and you know, where did you go to school, where did you grow up, and what's your relationship with this part of the country?
Sure. Well, I actually grew up where I'm working now. So one of our major projects I'll be talking about today, the Envision the Choptank Partnership, takes place on the eastern shore of Maryland and in Delaware, and one of the towns that's within the Choptank watershed is where I grew up. So we actually host meetings in a building where my family used to take our dry cleaning, which seems crazy to me, but it's now a really cool kind of multi-use center where a lot of environmental nonprofits hold their meetings and have offices. So it's a really direct connection for me. So growing up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, I was outside as much as possible, loved being in the water as much as I could. I then went to college at University of Richmond, just got a bachelor's of science in biology, and then went on to get a master's from Duke University. It's a master's of environmental management, so pretty interdisciplinary, but still has a really strong background in natural resource management. But you also pick up things about stakeholder engagement, economics, policy. So it gives you kind of a well-rounded view, which has been really helpful working with partnerships where you're bringing in a lot of different sectors, a lot of different types of people, doing all kinds of things. So I love the area where this work is taking place. It's very personal to me. Water quality, as you may be aware, is a really big issue here in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, which Envision the Choptank is within. So it's been a good fit for me. I'm enjoying working where I grew up. I thought it would be a bit odd when I first moved back here, but I've really enjoyed it. Some of our partners I actually went to high school with, or you know, I've known their dads or their sisters or friends. So it's very personal, and it's been a really rewarding project, I think, because of that.
Okay, so when I first heard this project being pitched to me as talking about this on the podcast, it was called Envision the Choptank. And I was like, is this a Shark Tank episode? Like, what is this name that we're talking about here? So can we break down what it is that we're talking about with this title?
Yeah, I like the Shark Tank idea. We might have to pull that in somehow into one of our meetings. So Envision the Choptank, it is a partnership. So it's not its own nonprofit, but we're a network of individuals and organizations we've been bringing together now since late 2015. So about 8 years, which seems amazing. It's been that long. And the folks we bring together, it's a variety of sectors, a variety of different types of people. We have nonprofit organizations that focus on environmental work, historic preservation work. We work with a lot of agricultural interests, universities, with local governments, state government agencies, federal government agencies. And then, of course, a lot of community groups and farmers and individuals just working and living in the Choptank watershed.
how did this get founded? What, you know, where did this all start? Who got pulled in originally? And what are the origins of this?
So really the spark for Envision the Chop Tank came from the creation of the oyster restoration tributaries in the Tredavon, in the Little Chop Tank, and in Harris Creek. Those massive large-scale oyster restoration projects were funded, were managed, and continue to be monitored by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as the state of Maryland and a whole host of other wonderful partners that came together to do this work. I've heard it said a couple of times that this scale of oyster restoration, that's one of the largest oyster restoration projects in the world, and likely the largest, certainly in the United States, that's taken place. So very large scale, a lot of resources put into these projects. When that happened, NOAA kind of looked around and said, how do we support the resources that we've been putting in over the long haul? How do we look at what's going on in the landscape and ensure that the work going on there contributes to maintaining and improving the in-water habitat to support those oyster reefs that have been restored? And so there's a lot of interest in seeing, well, who's working in this space, and is there a way we could bring them together to try to accomplish a little bit more as a team than we are as individual organizations? And at that time, I got connected with NOAA, and we started having conversations with a number of stakeholders, with a lot of partners working throughout the Chop Tank River watershed. And folks were doing some fantastic work. It was a little bit, you know, disconnected and disparate. So there was a lot of interest in how can we connect up these efforts to really ensure that we're able to continue to maintain and hopefully improve water quality in the future to support the oyster restoration work that's been done. And how do we really engage a wider variety of stakeholders in that process and really grow long-term support for not only oyster restoration, but for work on the land itself as well?
So we've got a watershed called the Chop Tank, and then the partnership is called Envision. And so you're coming together around this watershed. Why is this particular water body important to the local area, and what's wrong with it? What are we dealing with here?
Yeah, those are great questions. So the Chop Tank River watershed, it is the largest on the eastern shore of Maryland, and it's a really great, I guess you would say, microcosm of a lot of the watersheds throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed. It's terrifically important culturally, has a great significance there. Economically, it has one of the best crab harvests within the Chesapeake Bay watershed in the Maryland side of the water.
So Joanna, anytime I talk to anybody about anything in Maryland, it always comes back to crabs.
Crabs. We always say crabs, don't we? Yeah. The Chop Tank River it's really an economic, a cultural, and sort of a natural resource engine for the region. We get one of the best crab harvests from the Chop Tank River watershed. It's spawning grounds for really important fish species, oysters as well. And then, of course, on the cultural side, it's a very rural area. About 57 to 60% of the watershed is in agriculture. It's really important to the communities of the area and to the history and the culture. We also have part of the landscape of the Harriet Tubman National Monument and National Park is within the Chop Tank River watershed. So just a lot of fantastic history, a lot of wonderful old historic small towns. And then, of course, from a natural resources standpoint, you know, the Chop Tank River, the water quality, it's not terrible, but in the same respects, I believe it's the only river system in the Chesapeake Bay watershed that since the USGS started continuous water quality monitoring that has continuously showed increasing levels of nitrogen input. So it continues to go in the wrong direction, at least in terms of nitrogen, which is a bit concerning because that causes algal blooms, low dissolved oxygen, right? Not good for a lot of things. So that's a bit of a concern that we want to keep an eye on. So we want to be able to maintain the wonderful things that it's able to contribute and try to do what we can to prevent increased nitrogen inputs to the system.
So what has the Envision partnership done in terms of, obviously the collaboration is one of the things to be celebrated, and we can talk more about that, but what are the on the ground actions that have been taking place to help address that nitrogen issue?
That's a great question. So through Envision the Chop Tank, we have several areas of focus. One of those would be agriculture. Another is really working with our local governments, providing additional capacity for them. And the third is engaging disenfranchised communities, so low-income communities and also communities of color. So in the agricultural sphere, what we've really done is to work very closely with farmers, soil conservation districts, and other agricultural industry professionals to identify what's really the challenge to getting more conservation practices on agricultural lands. What's holding up farmers from agricultural landowners from doing that, and what types of incentives would be helpful to help get those practices on the ground? So we've developed a suite of flexible, I'd say more flexible incentives that are now available throughout the Choptank watershed. And that has helped us increase the rate of BMP or best management practice implementation throughout the Choptank River watershed. I think in the last 3 or 4 years, that's resulted in, I want to say about 200, 210 acres of best management practices. And those include things like tree buffers, grass buffers, wetland restoration, as well as drainage ditch management practices. So those are all things that have been implemented through our partners to prevent nutrient sediment runoff and also provide habitat.
So you say you've had really good success already. You've got 210 acres of best management practices or 210 best management practices on the ground. What's the overall goal? I mean, it's this really hard thing to quantify as, you know, as you get more data in and, you know, targets get sharpened a little bit as you get more work on the ground. But, you know, is there an estimation of, you know, are we running a marathon? Are we running an ultra marathon? Like, how far are we going here? And where do you guys think you're at in that process?
That is a really good question. I'm going to be honest. It's really hard to answer. So we've been going for about 8 years. The mission of Envision the Choptank is to provide swimmable, fishable waters and to enhance the health and productivity of native oysters in a way that best meets the needs of the surrounding communities. So what that really means is we're working to maintain and improve water quality and also habitat. That's habitat on land and in the water. And we want to do that in a way that really improves the quality of life for those that live and work in the Choptank River watershed. It's really that intersection of environmental objectives and meeting community needs that we really try to focus on, and I think sets us apart from some of the other efforts going on throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed. So I'm telling you all that to say there are sort of a variety of metrics that we're trying to improve, that we're working towards. Water quality is one of those and is a driver for the partnership and one of the reasons it was set up in the first place. Beyond that, as I mentioned, we also want to help improve the lives of those that live and work in the Choptank River watershed. So we are looking at how many practices are going in the ground. What is the water quality looking like? How was it when we started? What's it looking like now? It is really challenging for a variety of reasons to see changes in water quality over a short-term period. There's a couple of reasons for that. I can share the best of my knowledge why that is the case. So it's hard to see short-term increases and improvements, right, in the data, in the numbers. We can see it on a small scale, but looking across the Choptank River watershed, that's going to be a bit hard to do. So what we can do is look at the acreage of habitat we're working to improve. We can look at the number of practices we're putting in. There are Chesapeake Bay models that tell us how well that's doing. It's not real-time data, but it is a model that tells us this, you know, this is how much you should be improving water quality. And then when we think about how well we're meeting community needs and interests, that's something where our work on the ground, working hand in hand with communities, with farmers, that really gives us the feedback we need to know how well is that working and where can we improve? Where are the gaps that still exist?
One of the things that I like about projects like this is that we talk about water quality. Water quality is an important piece of this. This is clearly what the point of the Clean Water Podcast is all about. But it's not just about a number in the sample that you're trying to achieve. There are things that represents, which is, you know, played out in the oysters coming back or having stronger oyster habitat for more harvesting, or, you know, the crabs being able to feed off of those oysters and all of those things that come with it, right? So it's not just about you know, a number, but that number does help these other things that you're trying to accomplish. And so it's great that water quality is a slice of this, but it's not just about water quality in and of itself. It's about the whole ecosystem, including the humans inside of it.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of our mission. I mentioned before, we have sort of three areas of focus. One is agriculture. One, as I mentioned, was working with local governments. A lot of that work centers around improving stormwater management, and in particular, addressing flooding concerns. And those are things that citizens are calling into their local governments and saying, I've got my driveway flooded, the road is flooded, it's dangerous, I can't access my house, all these types of things. So we're trying to really address those issues and do it in a way that impacts water quality and to share that message at the same time. So to let folks know, this practice going in is going to help mitigate a lot of the flooding you're experiencing, but it will also have water quality benefits. And that provides great improvements for kind of all of us.
So what's the next challenge that you guys at the Envision are looking to try to address? It looks like you're having some success on the things that we've already talked about, but like, you know, as always, there's always something else on the horizon. So what is it that you guys are talking about that you're concerned with and you're going to tackle next?
I think two things come to mind. One is we've been able to pilot programs in each of these areas of focus for us in agriculture, in the work we're doing with local governments, and also the work we're doing with disenfranchised communities. So we've piloted those efforts, and we're at a point where we really want to scale those up and expand them across the Choptank River watershed. So for us, that's a big capacity question. How do you do that? How do you maintain that? The other big thing that's on the horizon for everybody is climate resilience. But just yesterday, we had a major storm that came through. We had some of the highest flooding folks have seen since Hurricane Isabel, which came up the Chesapeake Bay. And unfortunately, I don't think this is going to be an abnormal occurrence. In the past, I would say month, we've had two or three storms that have, within a period of a few hours, dumped 6 inches of rain, 8 inches of rain, and that's a pattern that's expected to continue. So how do we manage that? How do we manage that on the agricultural fields? How do we do it through our towns, the roads? How do we do it for people's individual property? It's happening on a pretty massive scale, and it's pretty challenging to figure out how do we address this on a large scale.
So Joanna, you mentioned working with disenfranchised communities is one of the things that you've piloted. Why was that an important aspect of the work? And, you know, can you talk a little bit about the success that you've had so far?
Absolutely. This was one thing when we first started developing what's called our common agenda for Envision the Choptank. That's basically our strategic plan. Folks recognized around the watershed that we weren't doing a very good job in the environmental movement in terms of engaging and getting resources to disenfranchised communities. So communities of color, and also low-income communities. It really wasn't happening, and it definitely wasn't happening to the scale it needs to be happening. And as we've all come to know, these are the communities that are going to get hit the hardest from climate change. So what we've been working on over the past, about 4 or 5 years, we've started by engaging three individual communities, two that are primarily African-American, one that is Hispanic. And we started by really just taking the time to listen, to understand what are the issues they're facing, what are the biggest challenges they're running into in addressing those issues, and what's their relationship like with natural resources, and how do some of the biggest concerns that they have overlap with our natural resources issues, in particular with water quality. And that area of resilience, climate resilience, is one where there's a lot of overlap. So there's a lot of flooding that's happening that's also contributing to declining water quality in a number of places. So if we can address one problem, we can address both, which is a really nice thing to be able to do. We've engaged those three communities in identifying where are they experiencing flooding across their landscapes, both on private and public properties within their neighborhoods. And we're now at the stage where we're identifying solutions to address those problems, all nature-based solutions. And we've raised, I think at this point, close to $390,000 to solve some of these issues. So to put in best management practices to mitigate the flooding, improve water quality. That's just the start. We've got a long way to go. We'll be implementing the first practices starting this spring, which is really exciting. It's taken us 3 or 4 years to really get to this point. And I think there's a lot of interest in expanding this work out to other communities. So again, we're trying to figure out capacity-wise, how do we do that and make sure we can still maintain the relationships that we're there whenever those communities have a question, whenever they have a need, we're there to be able to provide that as best we can. We always say when we start working with the community, we're here for as long as you want us. If you want to kick us out, that's completely fine. We understand. But this isn't something where we want to start a project and as soon as it's done, walk away. We really want this to be a long-term relationship and to engage these communities in deciding what projects should we be doing in the future? Where should we be doing them? What are we missing, right, when we're doing our environmental work? What are we not thinking about that we should be doing? So really doing full engagement with our disenfranchised communities. Building off of that, this last year, I would guess a year and a half, we've had a small group of folks, which includes several community members, design a program that we're calling Lead the Shore. And this is based off a program that started in Louisiana. It was developed initially by the Foundation for Louisiana. They called theirs Lead the Coast. We're calling ours Lead the Shore. But the idea is it's a program to equip residents from communities of color with the skills, with the connections, with the resources and information they need to develop their own vision for their communities, determine how to make that a resilient vision, and then to carry it out. So it's a leadership program, and we just ran the pilot with the first community this past fall, and it's been a really exciting, and I hope it's safe to say success. There's been a lot of interest in growing it. And again, the idea there is to not just be able to go into a community and do a project, but to be in a position where we put the power back in the hands of the communities themselves to determine their own visions, to take their own next steps. And we're there if needed, but if not, that's great. You know, take it from there. So that's been some really exciting work that we're excited to grow out over the next up to 5, 10, 20 years, however long people feel like it's needed.
Well, Joanna, thank you so much for spending some time and talking with us on the Clean Water Pod. And thank you so much for your dedication and working on water quality issues in Maryland.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it and appreciate your enthusiasm for it as well.
Leslie Grundin, Caroline County Department of Planning and Codes.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us on the Clean Water Pod.
It's great to be here.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about Leslie first. Before we get into the organization and all the great work that you're doing, I want to know about you. Where are you from? Are you from the area long? What got you interested in water quality and how long you've been doing it?
I'll go backwards. I've been doing this with the county 15 years. Before that, I was working for a private consulting firm nearby, local, in Talbot County, working on environmental issues for about 9 or 10 years. And then before that, my experience was more maritime. I worked for the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum for about 10 or 12 years. So I kind of started on the water and then slid into water quality. Based on an appreciation of the water. And I'm not a native. I'm not an Eastern Shore native. I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. in Chevy Chase. And my folks moved us over here when I was 12. So it was a bit of a culture shock. But the overwhelming sense you get, even as a 12-year-old, was, man, there's water everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And we lived on the water. So we went from being very urban and hard surface centric to, you know, soft rural landscapes and a river flowing by. It was amazing. I mean, I hated it because I was 12 and all my friends were gone, but I'm so glad they did it. It's just such a beautiful place to live, and the rivers are central to that.
Well, let's talk about the rivers. Let's talk about the Choptank. So we'll start off about the resource and what it means to the community and what's going on with it.
Right now, the Choptank is doing a little bit better than it was just a few years ago in terms of nutrient pollution and sediment pollution. It's central to the largest town in the county, the county seat, Denton, which is where I work. The Choptank flows right alongside the town of Denton. We have other large rivers. The Marshy Hope and the Tuckahoe River are part of Caroline County. There isn't unlike some of the other counties on the Eastern Shore, there aren't a lot of water-based, for instance, watermen working these waterways. They're more almost like hiking trails on the water. They're water trails. But because they're so visible and so much a part of the landscape here, they're central to everybody's life in Caroline County and very important to all of us.
So in what way, when you say that they're important, it's a recreational type activity, it's aesthetics, it's part of the identity of the people?
All of the above. Caroline County is extremely rural. It's an agrarian-based economy, and its history is intertwined with the rivers. I mean, agricultural goods were taken up and down the river by barge. Towns were formed alongside the river because they were essentially ports for agricultural goods. And as that changed over time, you know, and roads and trucks and railways and eventually planes took over, that part of the agricultural economy disappeared. But that central involvement of the river sort of stayed, I think, in everybody's psyche. So people gather by the river, they live by the river. You don't go a long distance without seeing the river in this county. So it's always visible and part of everybody's history.
So the Choptank has experienced issues in the past. You said it's better now than it has been in the recent past. But what were the issues as discovered by people that are studying this watershed?
Primarily nutrient pollution, nitrogen and phosphorus, and also solids, sediment loads, which is essentially, you know, we have a lot of farm fields. So those farm fields are covered with dirt. The dirt is plowed, so it's loose on top. And for a long time, that dirt, which also carried nutrients, washed into all the waterways, not just the Choptank, but all of our waterways. And agricultural practices began to improve probably a decade or two ago, with a real concentrated effort on putting in things like cover crops, which when the traditional, this is a corn soybean rotation economy here in Caroline County. So during the winter, there isn't anything growing on the fields. And when the cover crop program started, my range is 10 to 20 years ago, but I'm not 100% sure. That put something on the ground that held soil in place. You know, there was a root network and it was usually grain crops or cereal crops. And the more farmers that did that, the better the impact was to the river, because that soil, which normally would have washed off in winter rains and precip, stayed on the ground. And the farmers had, you know, a cash crop they could harvest in the spring. So I think that made a big difference in reducing some of the nutrient and sediment pollution in the Choptank. And then the upgrade of municipal treatment plants. Caroline County does not own or operate a treatment plant, but we have 10 municipalities within our boundaries, and five of those have their own treatment plants. And up until 2008, 2009, all five plants had no nutrient removal technology. They were all built probably in the early 60s. Next to rivers, because that was the outfall for the treatment plant. No treatment of nitrogen. They were secondary treatment plants. So there was a ton, literally tons, of TN and phosphorus going into all the rivers around here. So that began to change with the Bay Restoration Fund when that was implemented, and funding went to all of the major treatment plants in the state. Caroline County, in the town of Denton and the town of Federalsburg, both of those had major treatment plants, meaning over 500,000 gallons capacity a day. They were upgraded to enhanced nutrient removal technology, which, you know, when you go from a secondary treatment plant to an ENR, enhanced nutrient removal technology plant, the day you turn on that new plant, the reduction in pounds of nitrogen is instant, and it's thousands and thousands of pounds of nitrogen that is no longer going into the Choptank River. So those two major plants were upgraded to ENR in around 2009, 2010, and then in the mid 2010s the Bay Restoration Fund began funding minor plants under 500,000 gallons per day. And so two more of the towns came online with upgraded ENR treatment plants, both of them located by Greensboro's plant literally was on the Choptank River. And I think that their nitrogen load, this is a good example of how great the Bay Restoration Fund is and ENR technology. They were about 13,000 pounds of nitrogen a year going into the Choptank River. And the day they switched over to the ENR plant, that went down to under 4,000 pounds a year. And their goal is to get down to around 3,000. So that's a huge difference. So those improvements have been made over the last decade or so. And then we still have three minor plants that are not ENR upgraded. They're very small, so their input isn't significant. But they all have plans to upgrade in the future. And then the other big challenge is agriculture. You know, cover crops helped a lot. But there's still a lot of best management practices that could be implemented on farms. My department, Caroline County and the Department of Planning and Codes, doesn't really have purveyance over that. That is the Soil Conservation Districts and Maryland Department of Agriculture. So those agencies are working with farmers to implement more practices on the ground, on farms around here, because they are the dominant part of the landscape. I think we are about 200,000 acres, the entire county, and about 100, give or take 30,000, maybe a little bit more, is agricultural land.
So for those of you that missed episode 3 of this season, I would encourage you to run back and listen to that. That's all about the Bay Restoration Fund that Leslie's talking about there. So a lot of really good information about how that started and how that's funding really great projects around Maryland. So this Choptank inside of the Chesapeake Bay gives you an example of another group that's working on a specific watershed within that larger Chesapeake Bay watershed. I got a couple of questions about what you just said. One, Choptank. Do you have any idea how that was named? Because it's such a fun name.
It's actually, there were numerous Native American tribes, obviously throughout the state, and the Choptank Indians lived in this whole region. In fact, when Greensboro upgraded its old treatment plant, they relocated down the road a bit on the high banks of the Choptank River. And during the environmental review of that project, they had to do an archaeological review and discovered multiple ancient and Native American tribe sites all along the Choptank River. They weren't nomadic. I think they were by the river in the warmer months, and then they headed further inland during the winter months. But they fished and lived alongside the Choptank River all the way from Delaware down through Caroline County and into lower eastern shore Maryland. So the Choptank came from the Choptank Indians.
You talked about agricultural society. You talked about the river being part of the identity, people on the river. So that may have helped encourage adoption of some of those agricultural non-point source pollution practices like cover crops, particularly those that provide a third crop resource, right? Those are generally pretty well thought of. What's been the adoption rate of those kinds of practices in the watershed?
My knowledge, and I have heard anecdotally that the cover crop program has done very well. They've had a large response, and I think there might be a dollar limit. You know, they hit a limit of funding available, and I think that they hit that consistently. The programs that they also have, like buffers around fields, particularly in proximity to waterways, they have a good, if not fully, I think all of the potential buffered fields are buffered now. They've been doing that for years and years. There's a Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, CREP, which is essentially wetlands, creating and preserving, and in some cases, enlarging or expanding wetlands. That's a successful program. They're all based on cost share. The USDA's NRCS program pays, I think it's 87.5% of the cost to implement those practices, and then the farmer pays the remaining 12.5%. And sometimes they can get assistance from grant programs to help cover that 12.5%. But I think it's a very good participation rate. I think they're always hoping to get more people in. And a lot of it, depends in part on how crops are doing and what prices are for potential for certain crops, because in some cases you have to give up productive land to install the practice. But I think even with that kind of competition for the land space, the conservation programs are doing very well. And I think most of the farmers in Caroline County, the ones that I have worked with, are very good conservationists and are very willing. I'm working on a project now. We have a neighborhood on the Choptank River that has tremendous stormwater problems, old road, you know, 70s, not really subdivisions, but for Caroline County, they're kind of like subdivisions. And lots of flooding of properties and poor drainage. And the farmer on that road, he's the only really farm on that road, the rest are residential properties, had noticed the same problem. And we were out there looking at it, kind of going, what are we going to do? Because it was a stormwater project. And he moseyed up and said, I, what are you talking about? I've noticed the flooding problem too. I am willing to use some of my land if you are putting in a green practice. I've heard about a green practices. He just put it out there for us. So, and we're doing it. We are constructing a wetlands treatment facility on his farm. It's going to be about an acre or so to help take in the stormwater that's coming off of these properties so that they're drained, so that we have a water quality practice in place before it goes out into the Choptank River. That was sort of extraordinary. But the attitude I get in working on a lot of the projects around the county that are in or near farmlands, the farmers are very cognizant of their impact on the water and are willing, if not eager, to help if they have help to do it, you know, which is pretty much how everybody is, I guess, to be fair.
Tell me about Envision. What's the structure? Who's involved? And where did that get started?
I'm thinking in the brains of Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Maryland Department of the Environment. Joanna's brain, I'm sure, was involved. I wasn't there at the beginning. I came in probably a couple years into it. I was seeing emails about it and, you know, people were talking about them. But the actual birth of it, I'm not sure who actually created the idea. I do know that there had been several attempts at sort of environmental roundtables on the Eastern Shore to try and get counties and NGOs and even some funders and state agencies together to commiserate. But the Eastern Shore is very far flung. We're all a million miles away from everybody else. Here's the truth. 20 miles is a long way to go when your whole life is in this little town and you can get everywhere in your little town. When you got to go beyond half an hour to an hour, it feels like an eternity. So trying to get together with people on the lower shore or on the upper shore, and even some of the further away midshore counties, it just, you know, it most staffs are very few people. I'm the only environmental planner on the staff. Actually, right now, I'm the only planner in our department. So if you leave for 4 hours or work on something, you know, that's important time that you're missing. So they weren't ever really getting off the ground. And Envision, the Choptank, located themselves centrally, concentrated on, you know, the counties that are directly attached to the Choptank River, which kind of reduced the geographic field. So I think the difference between them and the other attempts were they really tried to focus the effort on the Choptank River, not like all of the Eastern Shore. And they did not give up after a year of trying. I was getting pinged by them for a good year before I was able to go, all right, I can make it to this meeting. So I got to hand it to them. Their tenacity was really amazing. And in that, by the time I came into the room, they had all of the key people. They had DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Department of the Environment, Department of Planning, Chesapeake Bay Foundation, the Riverkeeper, other counties, other towns, you know, my equals around me. And they were very much, what do you need? What's going on? What's your problem? And then they took the time to listen over time to our needs and really pay attention to what we were doing and what we wished we could do. You know, we always have a big wish list. And again, they didn't go away after a year or 2 years or 3 years. Here they are. They're still here. You know, they're just different. They're responsive. They really understand that the way to solve the problem is to talk to the people who are living the problem and let them tell you what the problem is. You know, don't go in with preconceived notions. So there's a lot of differences between them and the other attempts at it. And probably the most outstanding one is they are still here. They are still committed. Their commitment grows. They learn more every year about us and put that to work for us. And it's probably the most significant thing that's happened, speaking for care in my world in Caroline County, for this county, for water quality ever. Next to the Bay Restoration Fund.
So it's called Envision the Chop Tank. Is there a vision? Is there a vision statement?
They have a common agenda. In fact, this is the former one. The new one is just released. Yes, I could hand it to you. You can find it online. And it essentially it's sort of like a series of vision statements that encapsulate the goals that we have. I mean, there's a number of partners, and you're talking all different levels. There's federal level, state level, the NGOs, regional organizations like the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. You have tiny municipalities and rural counties, and then the urbanish municipalities like the town of Easton. They're like the city slickers in our group, Easton. And then our towns, our little towns, are involved in it. So there's a really broad spectrum. So you have a range of goals that are solve the flooding problem in downtown Goldsboro at the post office and the town hall using green stormwater techniques. You know, we want to solve this problem, but we want to do it in a way that is environmentally sound and teaches our residents about these practices that they could do in their own yards. You know, little things like that, to going down river and capturing all of the farms along certain segments of the river and enrolling them all in best management practices as a collective effort, you know, kind of a community scale effort for water quality. So there's large goals and small goals. And then the overarching goals are healthier river, healthier communities, an approach that gathers in all of the people and the different people that make up this area and involves them in it, in a way that is meaningful to them, where improving the water quality of the Choptank River is also improving the quality of their lives or their health or their community or, you know, the thing they look at every day or drive by or work next to every day. So they have a really good way of connecting people to the river and explaining how our fates are intertwined.
Well, how is your fate intertwined in this? Why do you keep coming back? What's the personal story for you in this connection and how you feel connected into this project and why you keep showing up for meetings?
To try and pull together that expertise to go to an area, look at the problem, determine what the potential causes are, come up with more than one solution, estimate what the cost of that would be, both design and build, go through a request for proposals process, oversee the management of the project, work with landowners. There could be an easement need, and then bring it all the way home at the end is something that I am able to do on a limited basis, on a small scale, two or three times a year, if I'm lucky. So Envision the Chop Tank comes in, and they bring technical expertise from Department of Natural Resources, Department of the Environment, NOAA, University of Maryland Sea Grant, the Riverkeeper, Chesapeake Bay Foundation. I could go on and on. So when I talk about a need or a potential project, I have all those voices in the room who are also connected to other resources. And it's sort of like a think tank at my disposal for ideas, sources of information, sources of funding. The real game changer was when Maryland Department of the Environment 319 program provided funding to extend, Envision the Chop Tank offered a technical circuit rider for its members, particularly, or for the local governments. And 319 program, and that was funded through NOAA, 319 program expanded that grant to make it a full-time position for 5 years. So that has never been something that we were offered before. The most we could ever hope for was a part-time person to help for 8 months. This is 5 years. So, I mean, my head like exploded because I have 10 projects that are large scale, community scale, school campuses that need design, permitting, you know, these are $500,000 and $1 million projects that take 1 to 2 years, let's say 2 years, pretty much. And then a community outreach component, because you don't want to miss that opportunity for education that there was no way I could possibly have done. But now I can, because I have an engineer at my disposal and I have these partners at Envision. And Joanna oversees it all, but she's also an on the ground person, helping coordinate community meetings, being at community meetings, doing community outreach. The Shore Rivers partner, the Riverkeeper partner, works with me to do as community liaison within communities when we have multiple private properties that are involved in a project. So it's like all of a sudden I have a full, what would be like working in a well-staffed planning department at my disposal to help with all of the tasks involved. So I love my little projects. Those are very, you know, they're rewarding and they're fulfilling. But these projects are very deep and meaningful in that they bring in people who are impacted by them. They learn about what we're doing. They learn about how the river and the importance of keeping the river clean is integral to their well-being. They see connections that they didn't see before to the river. They see connections to how impacts to water quality are the same things that impact their own health. They become kind of brand new stewards of the Choptank River, where before they loved it, they knew it was there, but now they're connected to it and they understand more about how the things that they do on land impact the river. And the river's health and what is impacting that is also impacting their own health. Just the expertise that they bring in to all of my projects is, I couldn't put a value on it. And now, this year, I have 7 projects. 2 are on my own. But I'm able to do the 2 on my own and do these 5 large-scale projects because of Envision the Chop Tank, doing half of what I would otherwise be trying to do on my own. So they have broadened my abilities. They haven't just increased the number of the projects I do. They've made them better. You know, they've made them richer, both for the river, because these are larger scale reductions I'm achieving, but also for the people, because we have the bandwidth now to go in and be able to meet with people and talk to people and explain what we're doing and sign them up to do this on their property. So it's a game changer.
Thinking about the people that are listening to this throughout the country, because as unique of a model as this is, or successful of a model as this is, the base of what you're talking about, the people that identify with the water, that identify with the river and what it brings and being part of that, that is not unique. That happens all across the country, right? And so there's somebody listening right now that's thinking, well, I care about my watershed. I love living here. I love what it brings to me and my community. What would you say are the, you know, 2 or 3 things for that person to get started to try to replicate this model for Envision the Chop Tank?
First, the local jurisdiction has to get involved. And that's the hardest thing, because especially in a small or rural area, those staffs are, you know, overworked and understaffed. So I think that's the first step, is getting the whoever is the local authority or the local jurisdiction in your area interested. And then, and I'm of the opinion, and my dad told me this a million years ago, that the county is the perfect level to work in government, because you're a little bit above, you're not down on the ground where the municipalities are, but you're not up in the clouds where the state and feds are. you're in this great middle spot where you can see the problems on the ground and you can see the people who have the means to help you, and you're the connector. So even if you live in a town, I would make that first step to the county and see what you got there. And they usually have bigger staffs than towns anyway. So maybe start there. And then with their help, hopefully, if you're in a town, go to the town and see if there is someone there who can help you. And then go up, you know, find the Department of the Environment, find the Department of Planning or the Department of Natural Resources. And there is somebody who will hear you and show up. They're always, I mean, there's millions of them. So somebody's going to show up. We also have fisheries people, you know, look in the places where water is important. So fisheries, maritime industries, anybody who's hitched their wagon to that river star is going to have an interest in protecting the river. So whether it's a state agency or an industry organization or a local river keeper, there's probably the equivalent of the Chesapeake Bay Foundation everywhere. Look at nonprofits, look at maritime museums. You know, they've got people and staying power and a you know, obviously a love for the river. And then go outward and go to the counties around. Anybody who the river flows through, talk to them too. And I wasn't there at the beginning, but that's what Joanna did. I know that's what Joanna did. She just started beating the bushes. If there are farmers in your community, go to them. You have to go to them because they're kind of in their own world, but they have breakfast and they show up for those things. So go
coffee
to their
for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Go to the soil conservation district, the local soil conservation district, and talk to them about helping you with outreach. And because especially if you're in a rural community, if you don't have that ag component, you're kind of spinning your wheels. You know, we could shut down every treatment plant in our county, rip out every septic, and we would still need to reduce 600,000 pounds of nitrogen loading into our rivers from ag. And then the other thing is, and this is where I got to hand it to Joanna, don't give up. Keep coming after people. It might take 3 or 4 times to get somebody to show up because everybody's busy and, like I said, understaffed, but keep going back to them in a very patient, kind way, like they did with me. And eventually people will show up.
Stick-to-itiveness.
Correct.
Anything we missed?
No. Did I mention how much I love Envision the Chop Tank?
Believe it came through.
Yeah. EPA and MDE are just phenomenal. They're just phenomenal. And I think it's that, I think when you have an organization that is all in, I think that's infectious, and I think it can even infect previously impervious state agencies who are quasi-emotional about our projects now.
If you have a good plan, a lot of things follow. That's been my experience in my career. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for your time and all of your water quality efforts in the Chop Tank, and thank you for joining us on the Clean Water Pod.
Thank you. It was great.
Okay, that's it for episode 5 of this season. I want to thank both Joanna and Leslie for taking the time to talk to us about what I think is a really replicable and interesting model for initiating water quality improvement at the local scale, wherever you're at in the country. Join us next month for episode 6 as we're going to head up to Cape Cod in Massachusetts. If you have any questions about this or future episodes, please get in touch. You can find us on Twitter @CleanWaterPod or send me an email @CleanWaterPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, what questions you have, and what you'd like to hear on the pod. Until next time, thanks for listening.